am.
Testing. Good afternoon. We're going to try to get started pretty much on time here. And I'd like to welcome you to Working for Fair Wages, Story of Two Communities. I'm Maureen Malaszewski from La Plata County, Colorado. My home is in Durango. How many people have been there? Oh, my God. It's like tiny. Route 70? Okay, well, you should come. Everybody else has. Yeah, we're near Mesa Verde National Park, and also a lot of tourists come for the Narrow Gauge Railroad, which goes from Durango to Silverton. It's a lot of fun. So anyhow, Jan Thompson and I today are doing a joint workshop talking about two different approaches, one that each of us has used or is using to improve wages. And our equipment didn't work out so great, so Jan's going to be changing the slides from there, and I'm going to have to look up at the screen once in a while, and I apologize for that. Okay. Okay, and then again. So we've outlined some goals, and this will be for both of our presentation. There's some common themes that we want to look at through this, and maybe you can identify those keys as they come up. One is identifying the sparks that light social justice initiatives. And I think that both of us will have something to say about this, and you have to kind of look for the sparks and take advantage of them. And second of all, the other thing that we run into besides sparks or the things that push us along are things that slow us down, and we hit these all the time, and I'll talk about some that I've run into. Also, we're going to talk about the steps of program implementation that we've used and maybe some lessons we've learned for maybe not going through the full process and then you have to backtrack. And last, we're going to talk about partnerships that are critical to success. Okay. So first of all, I just wanted to point out where Jan and I are from. I'm from that southwest corner of Colorado, and Jan is from the south central part of New Mexico. Okay, next one. So my story starts back in November of 2012. I belong to the Unitarian Universalist Fellowship of Durango, and our Sunday presentation was on growing inequality, economic inequality, that is, by one of our church members. And at that time, I was the chair of our social justice committee at the church. In our subsequent meeting after that presentation, some of the members were saying, this is a really important topic, and we have to get this information out to more people in the community. And next. And so we did. We asked, how we decided to do this was to ask the presenter to write an op-ed for the newspaper, which he did. He's an excellent writer, and he wrote that, and it was published in the newspaper. And next, what we did is said, well, what are we going to do with this now? Where are we going with this? So we called together more of our members in the fellowship to have a bigger discussion on people who are interested in this topic and where they thought we should go with it. And at that meeting, some of our church members recalled that in 2008, there was a master plan developed in our county called the Children, Youth, and Family Master Plan. And some of them had participated in developing that plan. The big goal of the master plan was to ensure that all La Plata children, youth, and families thrive. This plan took 2 years to develop. About 2,000 people were involved in the conversations that happened to put this together. Seven committees were formed, which included about 200 people. And it ended in 2008 with 120 five-page, five-year plan. Next. So in that five-year plan, one of the committees was family economics. And you can read the goal here of the family, or the recommendation of the family economics committee. Can you back up 1 second, Jim? Just had another thought there. So on that five-year plan for family economics, what was insinuated in that plan was that there are three municipalities, two very small towns in Durango, which is also pretty small, which would implement living wage ordinances. That was kind of implied in there, although not directly stated how this would be implemented. That was not part of the plan. Okay, so... Okay, you can go ahead. So our next step was to look at what other information is available about improving wages. And we went to the internet, of course, and found that since about 1994, when the first municipal ordinance for a living wage was established, about 140 other municipalities had approved ordinances to raise the minimum wage. Also, there were three employer recognition programs in the country, one in North Carolina, one in Ithaca, New York, and one in Western Massachusetts. And these were programs that were incentivizing employers to improve their wages for their employees. Also, at the same time, there were two really big things going on nationally. One was were campaigns to increase state minimum wages and also the national minimum wage. And you might all remember getting a lot of emails from the UUA and UUSC promoting the federal proposal to increase the national minimum wage to $10.10 an hour. Does anybody remember that? Getting those emails, and anybody here participate in that campaign? And the other big thing that was going on was quite a large campaign to improve wages at the big box stores, especially the Walmart, $15 an hour, was kind of starting back then. So there was a lot going on in the media about this issue. So it was really a good time for us to be jumping into this and making it an issue locally also. Okay, so after we did that research, my husband and I went to Santa Fe and met with the people who were instrumental in the living wage ordinance that was passed in Santa Fe. And we met with them for about 2 days, and it was just, you know, priceless, the guidance that we received from them. And several big points I took away from there was, number one, they said, you have to find out if Colorado has a preemption law. A preemption law is a state law, well, applied to this, it's a state law which says that municipalities are not allowed to change the minimum wage. Only the state can do that. So a big difference between Colorado and New Mexico is that New Mexico does not have a preemption law, and Colorado does. And that was passed in the 1990s when, interestingly enough, a lot of municipalities were doing local ordinances to increase their wages. So that's when the state of Colorado passed this preemption law, interestingly. Their other big recommendation, they couldn't say this enough times, was the most important thing before you do anything is to build a coalition. And I wasn't exactly sure what that meant, but I'm learning. Also, work with your allies. Another big difference between New Mexico, well, between Las Cruces and Durango, or between Santa Fe and Durango, is that in Durango, we have very little presence of organized labor and unions. And when they talked about working with your allies in Santa Fe, they had huge union support, and probably their alliance with the unions was really huge in letting them pass their ordinance or getting them to pass their ordinance. The other thing that they recommended is, the business owners are going to be your enemies. You know, they said stay away from business owners. So we listened and then took it to our community because every community is different. So what applies there might not apply where we are. Also, don't get into economic arguments. This is a moral issue. And I found that to be very true because economic arguments, you can pick whatever data you want, and there's a lot of people who are a lot better at arguing those points than you are, but nobody can argue with the moral issue of the importance of fair wages. So we had to make a decision. Do we use a carrot or a stick approach? So in this whole kind of process, it was informal, it was discussions, more people were coming in, inviting more people, looking back to the people who were involved in that Family Economics Committee, and calling them up and saying, do you want to get back into this conversation, and kind of starting to build our coalition that way. And so it was a very informal organization, and we did eventually come up with a name, La Plata County Thrive Living Wage Coalition. Next slide, or the next. And we had to come up with a mission statement, too, to enhance the quality of life in La Plata County through fair and just wages for all. And our vision was that La Plata County is a place where all workers are paid a living wage, enabling individuals, families, and the community to thrive. And a lot of this language and the concepts were really taken from that master plan. So that master plan was something that was already in place that we really drew quite a bit of kind of background and startup. It was a spark for us. Next. And we have a principle that all workers should be paid a living wage. And the reason that we have this principle is that we take to all sorts of events and farmers markets sheets where people can put their name and say, I agree with this. And that's one way to build our coalition, to say this isn't just a handful of people saying we believe in this. And we have 680 signatures right now. Remember, it's a small town. Next. So here are our goals. Number one, to build a coalition, and that's an ongoing challenge. And that's something we do day in and day out by talking to people and getting these supporter sheets signed. Also, education. In 2014, we screened Inequality for All at the college in Durango and had a discussion afterwards. And on April 15th of this year, Jeff Furman, who's the chair of the board of directors of Ben & Jerry's, came to Durango and did two different presentations, one at the college and one at the library in the community. Besides that, we do other workshops, other, you know, articles for the newspaper, and as I say, go to events and just talk to people. So I want to focus on what we ended up doing with our CARED approach was recognizing employers who provide or aspire to provide a living wage for their employees, and that's called the TERP, Thrive Employer Recognition Project. And right now we are working towards advocating for improving minimum wages, and just kind of launching into our advocacy program. But we're going to focus on TERP. Okay, so the goals of TERP are to reward employers who pay a living wage, and then provide employers with tools and incentives to do that. So we'll talk about the incentives in a minute. One of our tools is, if they are not already paying a living wage, is to hook them up with a small business development center at the college in Durango, and they'll get 5 hours of free consultation on how to work towards improving wages for their employees. And then we connect consumers with living wage employers, and I'll talk a little bit about that, and in general, to promote a just and sustainable economy. So to be eligible for the TERP program, the employer has to have at least employ at least one person in La Plata County, endorse the principal, so they have to check a box on the application that says all workers should be paid a living wage, and to pay their employees a living wage or make a plan to do so. So that plan to do so is within 6 months, the aspiring living wage employer comes up with a plan of how they're going to work at improving wages for their employees. Okay, so the benefits, we give each certified employer a certificate that they can put on the wall, and we have a website and a Facebook page, publicity through the local media. We have window decals that they can put on their business, and also the consumer support that they get. We believe that more people will go to living wage employers if they know about them. Next. So this is one of our living wage employers. This is Kathy. She's the director of our local soup kitchen. And it was very interesting. Some of the first people I talked to in building the coalition were our nonprofit organizations that have clients who are low-wage workers. And they really get it, how important it is for people to make a living wage, because they're having to provide food and shelter for people because they're not making a living wage. And many of their clients are employed full-time and still have to go to the food kitchen or the soup kitchen. So that was their certificate. This is the window decal that they can put up at their business. And these acknowledgement cards, this is what you see here is on the front of a small manila envelope, and it explains what these acknowledgement cards are about. Can people read that? Is it big enough? Okay. So that envelope holds 10 acknowledgement cards, and it explains on the outside what to do with them. And in the envelope, there will also be a list of all of the certified employers so that they can put it in their glove compartment or their pocket or their purse. And when they're going out, say, oh, I'm going to pick a restaurant. Let's see. Let me get one that's a living wage employer. And we're hoping eventually to have this on an app. I'm thinking maybe nationally for all of the employer recognition programs. So when you're traveling, you can find a restaurant that's certified or a business that's certified. And next. And these are their business size cards, that there's 10 of them inside the envelope. So this is what you would leave at that restaurant when you pay for your bill or any other business. And the back of it is blank, so people can actually write a note if they want, a personal note. And I have to say the consumers absolutely love these. I was surprised the first time we got these together and took them to it was a movie screening, and then I was part of a panel afterwards, and I introduced these, and we sold them out. I just took 40, and there were only about 50 people there, and sold them out. People loved them. We asked people for a $1 donation for two reasons. One is to cover some expense, and the second reason is to give them some value. So we started certifying employers back in November. We started out saying we're going to certify quarterly. We just changed that to three times a year with a two-year recertification. And we're calculating the living wage for our county annually. Next. Okay. So just getting in a little bit to the challenges. I talked about the preemption law. Next. And another big thing is when we say that the employers must pay a living wage, the other thing is that there are certain what we call basic needs benefits that can be counted towards that living wage, which we calculated July of last year was $12.40 for our county. So those basic needs benefits are housing, transportation, childcare, and food. So quite a few business owners really wanted to get into this, and they provided some insurance coverage for some of their employees, and they thought that should count. The reason that we decided not to include that as a basic needs benefit is that other employer recognition programs in the country, one of the longest standing one, which is in North Carolina, does that, and in discussions with them, they wish that they hadn't. It's so complicated, and it varies so much from business to business. And then with the Affordable Care Act, actually it could be make things worse, actually, for employees. If their employer offered insurance, and then they wouldn't qualify for the Affordable Care Act. So it's very complicated, and we're still kind of trying to think that one through. Other challenges that have come up have been opponents. When we first did our research about when the master plan first came out and we looked back at some of the media coverage, the Chamber of Commerce came out and said this wasn't a good idea, assuming that it was going to be an ordinance that we were looking at. So, businesses have actually been very receptive to the employer recognition program, but doing an ordinance is a whole different animal. And as the lawyers in Santa Fe say, you'll have a lot of opposition, but that's what lawyers do. We didn't have a lawyer. The other thing that came up in our employer recognition program, this has been rather recent and very interesting, is that when we were having our spring event, we were looking at some of our certified employers giving support, financial support for that. And so the discussion came up that this is a potential or actual conflict of interest, or it might appear as a conflict of interest. And so that's kind of an ongoing discussion. And where we're at right now is having a discussion about should we actually have an external organization do the certification process for us so that we don't run into that conflict of interest. Funding this is difficult, and if we can't get support from the people who we're promoting, that's just one more difficulty in getting funding. We have some great partnerships, and we are in the Region 9 Economic Development District, and the state's divided into various regions. This covers 5 counties. We are one of those 5 counties. And we're having some initial discussions about possibly expanding this program to those 5 counties down the road once we get it running smoothly. Other great partners have been the other employer recognition programs. And I'll just mention, when we started our program, we were the 4th one in the country, and now there are 6. So they've doubled in the last couple of years. Another great relationship has been with Interfaith Worker Justice, and recently Interfaith Worker Justice has started bringing these employer recognition programs together for quarterly phone conferences, and we're continuing to work with them and seeing other relationships that might develop there. I had the UUA down there also. We have gotten a grant from the UUA and an award from the UU Service Committee for our program. Just listing here the resources, the other employer recognition programs to date, Interfaith Worker Justice, and there are national living wage calculators, which are pretty interesting, and everybody has a little bit different methodology, and this is something we continue to look at, is our methodology for calculating the living wage. Okay, I think that is it. Should we do questions now or wait until Jan's finished and take a few questions? Okay, while it's fresh. It's 3:28, Jan, that's pretty good. We do have 50 minutes allotted to questions, so I'll take a few now, and then maybe at the end there will be some more for both of us. Go ahead. I do. And I'm not sure, actually, I brought some of our pamphlets and some various handouts. We'll put them up here. And then if we run out, just give me your email address and I can email those to you. Yes. Yeah. I have there, the only thing from the presentation on there are the resources. I don't have the whole PowerPoint on there, but I'd be happy to send it to anybody who would like it. And my phone number is on the pamphlet also, if anybody wants to call me. Yes.
Could you say a few words about your attempts or success to organize the actual low-wage earners and how they're involved in this?
This isn't made for a tall person. It's really important to us to try to get low-wage workers to actually take a lead role in deciding the direction that we take, and it's also very difficult to get low-wage workers involved. We did, so just a little bit as far as structure, we realized after a while that we needed to do, if we're going to apply for grants and so on, that we needed to do something, and we really didn't want to make the effort of becoming independent 501c3. So we have a fiscal agent. So we are actually a project of another nonprofit organization. Also, more recently, we formed a steering committees and some bylaws. And in our bylaws, basically we say that the guidance does come from low-wage workers. Our steering committee, our goal is to have at least half of our steering committee members low-wage workers, and also representatives from all sectors of our community, nonprofits, faith-based groups, employers, workers, and business. So we're still in the process of forming our steering committee, but that's kind of our goal. What we're planning right now is a training for low-wage workers to work on wage policy issues. So to train them to become activists and talk to lawmakers and so on, and offering them an honorarium. I'm working on some grants to try to get some money to pay them an honorarium to do this training and also to do the policy work. Does that answer your question? And it's very challenging. We try to have picnics during the summer, which are open to the community, invite people who are low-wage workers to tell their stories, both on our website and at these picnics, if we can just have conversations about, you know, how wages affect their lives, either, you know, negatively if they're not making a living wage, or if they are now making a living wage, what that means to their lives and their quality of life. Okay, thank you. Thank you. Yes? Do you guys want to, is this being recorded? No?
I don't think so.
Okay. There is a microphone maybe so everybody can hear your question, or I can repeat it. I would say that our core group is about 30 people. As I said, we have kind of different levels, but routinely, not everybody comes to all the monthly meetings, but there is a list of 25 people who do that, and then we have people who don't go to meetings, but they just want to do data entry, or they just want to do a project here or there. So it's all different levels of involvement. Way at the back.
How would you, I mean, different parts of the country have lower or higher costs of living? And I don't know if you can answer this, but how would you work to decide what a living wage in one area versus another area?
Yeah, so that hit home with me when I moved from Buffalo, New York to Durango, where you can get about a third of the house for three times the price. So that's the whole point of a living wage. living wage is based on the cost of living where you're living. And that's what these national, like through MIT or UC Berkeley, these living wage calculators do. And they get data, if you look at those sites, they get data from various sources. One thing that we don't use that, because if you actually are able to calculate some things locally, you can get much more accurate data and much more up-to-date data on the things that we calculate locally are housing and child care, as we have more accurate data than any of those ones that are doing the whole country. And there was just a piece in the Washington Post yesterday about IKEA raise their wages again, and their goal, and I think this is the first national company to do this, their goal is to pay their employees a living wage. So if their employee is here or here, their wage is going to be different based on the cost of living in that area. And that's pretty neat. I mean, maybe that's something we'll see more of and it'll make sense. Oh, sorry. Let's see, our next meeting is in July. So we had two rounds of certification so far, and we have 41 certified employers. The reception has been great. There's a few employers that say, I can't do this. And it's like, that again, that's the carrot approach. So we understand, and that's okay. Tips can actually count towards the living wage. So if there are, we do it looking at on monthly basis, so within a month, if that employee's tips bring them up to $12.40 an hour, then if that affects all the employees that way, yeah, then they can get certified. And we actually have one low-cost, I call it healthy fast food restaurant, Mexican, fresh mix, called Zia Taqueria, and they have two stores. They do an excellent business. I can go in and have lunch for $3, and they pay a living wage. So I was so happy to get them, because if they can do it, you know, and it's like if Costco can do it, you know, Walmart can do it. If In-N-Out Burger can do it, McDonald's can do it. And it's great to have in our own town, you know, a low-cost restaurant that can pay a living wage if they want to. It's a matter of desire. I'm just wondering if maybe we should let Jan go ahead so we don't run into her time, and then take some questions. And I'll stick around afterwards if anybody wants to talk more.
Yeah, thanks, Mo. We did it a little differently in Las Cruces, New Mexico, partly because we do have the preemption law so that the municipalities can have a different level of minimum wage than the state. The state of New Mexico minimum wage is $7.50, $2.13 for tipped employees. That's the federal $2.13. We've made attempts politically to try to get the state to raise the minimum wage. The legislature passed an increase to $8.50, but the governor vetoed it, and we didn't have the votes to overcome that. So given the political background, and twice we tried for minimum wage at the state level and were not successful, therefore, in order to get the minimum wage raised in Las Cruces, we decided that we needed to do it on a citywide basis. We have in our city charter a citizens' ordinance, a ballot initiative procedure. It had never been used. It's been on the books for 50 years and never been used. So it was a first, and we were kind of finding our way through it. The organization that I worked with, let's see if this is going to, no, you're going to have to press the arrow button there more. Mo, you see it? Yeah, okay. So the organization that we worked with, we had been working with them on immigration issues. This is Comunidades en Acción de Fe, or Communities in Action and Faith. It is an intercultural, multicultural, interfaith organization affiliated with PICO, which is People Improving Communities Through Organizing. It's a national organization. You maybe have heard of it. It has many affiliates throughout the United States. We are one of those. And we go by the name CAFE. So when people got upset with us, they put together a Facebook page called Close the CAFE. And I'll get into some of that later. Mo's approach, which she has to do because they don't have the preemptive law anyway, Mo's approach is, it's a little slower, I would say, but when you get through it, everybody's still friendly. When you get through what we went through, there's a lot of rancor, nastiness, just nastiness. And there still is a lot of division. People just really haven't calmed down yet. And, you know, we just, okay. And in the meantime, we've got the law. So it was successful, but not in the way that we would have liked. Next. Back in 2013, we called for a meeting, October 17th, to begin talking about raising the minimum wage. What would it look like? How would it operate? We are, almost everything we do is in English and Spanish partly because the staff of CAFE is bilingual, multicultural, and where we live is bilingual, multicultural. The state is bilingual by law, and so everything comes out both ways, and our programming is always done bilingually. Next. So after that meeting in October, we then had our very first public demonstration at McDonald's on December 5th, 2013. And next slide, please. And we got a lot of newspaper coverage and a little TV coverage about it. We had some politicians there, the ones that had supported a minimum wage. Lots of signs, different age groups, although it was held at noon, and so some of our younger people couldn't be there. We did not have one single person who was receiving minimum wage there to speak. They were afraid. They'd rather have $7.50 than lose their job. Okay, so it took a little while before I was able to find a spokesperson. Who was a server at a restaurant at $2.13 an hour, and she became our poster child, 50-year-old poster child. Next slide, please. So then a lot of things started happening. First of all, we had a lot of base meetings. And base means people who are really firm members of CAFE, people who really care about the issue, who are working on it in one way or another, not all the extra people who come out for demonstrations and come out to, they're very favorable, but you know they're limited in how much they're willing to work. So our base were the workers, and we were having meetings at least three or four weeks, usually even more often. And we started meeting. We had a teach-in at the temple. We met with the president of our local LULAC, the League of United Latin American Citizens. LULAC is a national LULAC, and even our local LULAC holds a lot of weight. It's if they say they support something, it speaks loudly, at least in Las Cruces. So we went to them, and they were very eager to support us in this. We then met with the leaders of the three chambers of commerce in Las Cruces, the Hispano, the Greater Las Cruces, and the Green Chamber. And then later we also met with restaurant owners. We called them in separate. The Hispano and Greater Las Cruces, well, this is where our trouble is, and still is. They did not want to see an increase in the minimum wage. Their whole emphasis is on profit. Their bottom line, the only bottom line they have, is profit. The Green Chamber of Commerce, which is comprised mostly of very local businesses, believes in a three-prong bottom line, and that is people, planet, and profit. And they will go in and show employers how they can still have profit while treating their employees well and accommodating our sustainable earth. And it's very successful, and they were very supportive. Not so much publicly, but they gave us information that we needed advised us regularly on what we were doing. Next slide, please. So then we had a research, we already had a lot of information about minimum wage and fair living wage that we had used with the legislature. But we also met with Dr. James Peach, who is a head economist at New Mexico State University. He gave us some more information and spoke out publicly in favor of what we were doing and wrote letters to the editor in favor of what we were doing. And a lot of other people are writing letters to the editor and, you know, promoting these things. And we also were having a few more public demonstrations. I didn't get pictures from all of the things we were doing. The city council had a work session on minimum wage. And they voted to hold what we call in Las Cruces great conversations. A man named Randy Harris holds these on various topics, and he brings in people from, you know, just anybody can come to a great conversation. And he insists that, you know, it be respectful, that we listen to both sides, we don't interrupt, we no name calling. If you think you might be talking too much, you undoubtedly are. So he leads these conversations, and the council voted to use that procedure. It wasn't totally unregulated, because the council members were each allowed to choose two or three people that they wanted to have participate in the great conversation. So these are hand-picked people. This is not just community-wide, open it up to the community. But they were interesting, and they were useful. And there was a public radio interview with Cafe, at which point, after we had the great conversations and all, no, we hadn't had them yet. At this time, we're saying we want $10.10 by January of 2016. Okay, we said $10, and including for tipped employees. It was just a straight $10 an hour wage. But then President Obama said $10.10. We thought, well, that sounds good. And so we went to $10.10. And we wanted it for everybody, and we wanted it after 2016. It would be indexed to the cost of living every year. Next slide, please. Okay, so then we had another base meeting. The reason I put this up, and it's so small you can't see it, but you might notice in the back was the Spanish. This is the English side. It says, free child care and dinner will be provided. We did this all the time. Every time there was a base meeting, there was free child care and food. This was in order to get some of our low-paid people to come and participate in our meetings. They might not speak publicly, but we needed them to be there and participate with us. And CAFE has money because they've been in business for quite a while, since 2007, and they have received a number of grants from various, particularly the Catholic Church, but also Kellogg Foundation, a large amount of money from the Kellogg Foundation. And so they had money to do these things, but you need that money. You need that money to really do it and get people, so you eliminate the barriers by having that. And so we have some very good grant writers. And next slide, that was calling for a meeting March 18th. Well, here we are having it. We began in the sanctuary of Holy Family Church, which is not a Roman Catholic church. It's an American Catholic church that believes in choice and same-sex marriage and all kinds of wonderful things. But this is the way that we often would hold our base meetings. We'd say, all right, now, you know, talk to somebody you haven't talked to very much, get to know them, talk about why you're here so that it reminds you why you are here. You also hear why other people are here. What is your story? How did you get here? What brought you here? So we do a lot of that. Next slide, please. And then we went into the social hall and broke into groups. This large group over here was the one that said, okay, we're going to be the petition circulators. We'll recruit people to go out and get the petitions signed because this was the route we had decided to take. We needed 2,237 valid signatures, and so we decided we would try to achieve 6,000 signatures in 60 days. But, yeah, it seemed almost impossible, but we committed ourselves to it. Those people at that far table there said, yes, we are going to make it work. I personally commit to getting 500 signatures. Well, I couldn't because I don't live in the city of Las Cruces. I'm in the county just outside of the city, so I couldn't circulate. But boy, did I recruit a lot of circulators, you know, and got them out there and kept emailing and yay team, go team, you know, we're doing this, we got it going. So that's how this was all working. It's bringing people together. It's working in coalition. We had a lot of people from a lot of different religious groups and the unions. The unions were there, and we also had some politicians who were very sympathetic. This guy up in the front in the purple shirt is my state senator. That's Bill Soles. He happens to be Unitarian Universalist, but actually, in Doñana County, which is where Las Cruces is located, we are the second poorest county in the nation. Okay, we have a lot of undocumented immigrants and immigrants who've been here for a long time, but have never, if you don't have white privilege, it's hard to break out of that. And so we have a lot of people who live in poverty and just can't seem to get beyond it. So anyway, it's a location that cries out for better minimum wage. And then we had, next slide, please. So then from March to April, we had lots of op-eds, and articles in the local paper. We had the great conversations. So then on April 10th, we submit our language for the petition. You know, we thought, oh, great, this is the culmination of our effort. We take it in, we're going to get these petitions made up. Well, no. They didn't like it. You know, the city attorney kept finding all kinds of reasons why what we submitted wasn't adequate. And so our legal advisors and the city attorney would meet, and they'd work some things out, and then they say, okay, we'll think about that. And then they come back, well, no, you've got to change something else, or you don't have an enforcement thing. Anyway, what we finally submitted, our actual language that we submitted, was a compromise based on our meetings with the chambers, with these great conversations. I mean, we were being really, really responsive, we thought, you know, but it didn't satisfy the chamber people, but it did satisfy a lot of other people. So we said, okay, there's going to be a difference in the minimum wage for tipped employees. In the first year, they'll have 40% of what the regular minimum wage is, and in the second year, they'll get 60% of what the minimum wage is. And then we raise the minimum wage over this three-year period to 10-10, okay, in increments, and we've already implemented the first increment. So that meant that Walmart and Jason's and everybody, target, they all had to bring their minimum wage up to our new minimum wage for anybody who was located in Las Cruces. So then we had a big rally, April 10th, when we submitted our language, we had a rally. Next slide, please. At City Hall. And I don't know if you can see, but we had T-shirts for everybody. These T-shirts, they became very, very popular, very identifiable. Everybody knew. And they saw these brown T-shirts, a sea of brown T-shirts coming, that was Cafe. These were people who were working to raise the minimum wage. And there's several of them being worn there. We didn't sell them. We gave them away. Okay, another use of our funds. Next slide, please. Oh, that's another slide. It's not very good, but I put it up there because the person who is speaking is our poster child for minimum wage. That's my friend Cassie Calway. She's from the Unitarian Universalist Church in Las Cruces. She is a tipped employee. She's a server at Cracker Barrel. She's been doing that for 5 years. Her story is that her husband died of brain cancer, and here she is with these preteen and teen daughters, and so she went to work, the first thing she was able to find. And while she also enrolled in college, she has finished her bachelor's degree. She's now a master's student in social work. And her daughters are both honor students in their respective schools. I don't know how she does it. She's also vice president of our congregation, is president of the CUPS group at our church, and on the religious education committee. She does. She's doing all those things because she can't make a pledge to the church, and she feels badly about that. So she's working her tail off in other ways while still carrying a full load at school. This is her story, and later we had her daughter speak too, her older daughter. It brought the mayor to tears, okay? And he had not been very sympathetic, but it brought him to tears, and it brought him around, and he is a strong supporter now of minimum wage and thinks that the way it actually worked out, which I will get to, was a travesty. It made hash out of our citizens' initiative, ballot initiative procedures in the city. It was not done appropriately. He says, we will not do this again. We will do it the right way. Cassie is just wonderful. Next slide. The reason I put this one on there, there's my senator again, is because the top half of that red drape, it shows the number of meetings with individuals that were held from January to May. Okay, May. Like 699, people on the staff and our base group met one-on-one with individuals, that many individuals over that period of time. Now, there may have been repeats, but that's a hell of a lot of meetings. And then at the bottom part, it's groups. And over 300 group presentations were made in that period of time. That's a lot of groups, a lot of educating that was being done. And that includes our base meetings also. I mean, it's just anytime there's a group, people working on that subject, it got a little tick. And so I just thought that was really impressive. May 1st, we thought we would have our petitions ready to hit the roads and start getting signatures. That would be our 60 days. But because the city attorney kept saying, we got this flaw here, we have a flaw, we have to fix that up, we did not get our petitions until May 29th. Next slide. And as you can see, we're pretty happy about it. That's Jerry Natchison from the temple who's carrying them. The next slide, we started getting signatures. So we really only had 31 days to get 6,000 signatures because we knew that there would be a number that would not be valid. That's a lot of signatures in a short period of time. But we got 1,000 in the first weekend. All right, what does that say about the sentiment in our community? You know, 6,000, they weren't all valid, as we discovered. But they were valid because those people really wanted to see a minimum wage, whether they were truly registered voters or not. And a lot of the signatures were invalidated because they forgot to put their middle initial. It has to be exact. Or they had moved and not notified the registrar, the clerk. But anyway, we went to town. We had 12 volunteers from our local UU congregation who were citizens living residents of the city and capable of getting signatures circulating. And also, they were trained to register voters so that if somebody came up and said, well, I'm not a registered voter, they could register them. They could not get their signature that day, but they alerted people, well, we'll be here next week. You know, we'll submit your registration, and next week you can come. Okay, so June 2nd, while all of this is going on, our city council voted to raise the minimum wage to $8.50. So they were trying to subvert our efforts. They did not want this ballot, this issue to go to the ballot. They did not allow public input at the meeting when they voted that. They knew what would happen. They plunged ahead 4-3. The three council members who voted against that had been working with us and continued to work with us. We were up to 5,000 signatures by June 20th. And then on June 30, next slide, please. We hit 6,031 signatures. Okay, we are really pleased about that. And up here in the middle, that's the director, the executive director for CAFE. To the left of her is Rabbi Larry Carroll. To the right of her is my minister emerita, Nancy Anderson. And to the right of her is Linda Mervine, minister for the UCC and Disciples. What's the Disciples of Christ? There's a merged congregation also, as is Unitarian Universal. Next, please. Okay, so then September 7th, we tried something similar to what Mo did, and we went around these things, these decals. We had a big rally to announce that we were going to do a boycott. And if you displayed this told people to go and buy. Next slide, so you can see it bigger. A boycott are local businesses who support a dignity wage. And it was not particularly successful because everybody was waiting for that ballot. But next slide. So we had a number of actions, of course, and then finally we got the city council. The way our ordinance reads is it will go to a ballot unless the city council votes to accept it. Okay, so they voted to accept our proposal. Yay! Except they said at the time, we're going to amend it. We'll accept it, but it needs a lot of work. So, next slide. So we put up a billboard that, okay, Las Cruces, you get 10-10, but you've got to work hard to save it, to keep it, because council wants to change it. Okay, and we had a lot of publicity about that. We did a lot of things to try to get that right. So it's but in the meantime, we can't take the ballot. We can't take the issue to the ballot. We have been preempted from that. So all we could do was work with the council, work politically, get get the people who were concerned to write to their council members, their representatives, and get, you know, really take action. And so there were all kinds of more back and forth and all that kind of stuff. Then October 27th, the council voted to repeal their 850. But they said, well, we have to rewrite this thing. We're going to put in more exemptions. We're going to change the timing of it. We're going to, it won't go to 10-10, but it'll get close, you know, kind of thing. And so we had a whole lot more work to do, and we kept working and kept working. And finally, on November 25th, one of our three council members who was a friend changed his mind. And it turned out that what he proposed got accepted. We're still friends. What he did was he got the same proposal, but it goes in much slower. So instead of phasing it in over 3 years, it's being phased in over 5 years. So 5 years from now, we will get to 10-10. But, you know, why? Well, because he thought that the only way to keep it from getting really messed up was it was a further compromise. We had already compromised, but it was a further compromise. We were very disappointed, but, you know, that's what we did, and that's what happened. We got it in. At least we have the minimum wage. And also we had been doing voter registration like crazy because, you know, we wanted to get rid of some of those people who had not been our friends. So we had more T-shirts and more people going out and getting folks registered to vote. And then came the flak. Then came the close the cafe. And this was after, on December 1st, the council voted in this revised program. And then in January, for January 22nd, I cause trouble. So in September and October, I had been holding some rallies for choice because 40 Days for Life, we got a new abortion clinic in town because Texas lost a whole bunch of them and we're just 50 miles up from Texas. So we got an abortion clinic. And I was holding support rallies for them. 40 Days of Life was there, and the first time they tried to give us a hard time, but I said, yeah, we're not here for trouble. You have your opinion, we have ours. You stay there, we'll stay here. And so it worked out, but they didn't like us being there. And then for the anniversary of Roe v. Wade, I had another demonstration, and I wound up with a half-page ad in the paper running for 3 days straight about Catholics. Do you know how your money is being spent? See, I was treasurer of CAFE by this time. And the implication was that I was spending CAFE's money to support choice and to defy the so-called pro-life people. Next slide. So they even put it on a Facebook, you know, that, oh, I'm being insulting, that, what was it, mocking, that I was mocking Catholics. You don't mock Catholics in Las Cruces, you know. And I wasn't mocking them. I was saying that I thought that they were wrongheaded and that, you know, most of them really stand for choice because they also agree that there are some, most of them also agree that there are some instances when abortion would be appropriate, you know? And so that's choice. And I'm not, they also kept calling me pro-abortion, which I am not. You know, I don't advocate for abortion. I advocate for the availability of safe legal abortions, but choice. So anyway, there's been that trouble. I finally resigned as treasurer of CAFE. The board did not want me to do that, but the director did. And I just thought, I have other things, other fish to fry, and I didn't want to waste my energies fighting that. So I am still very, very friendly with CAFE. I do a lot of work with them still. Next slide. And in the February 18th city State of the City address by our mayor, he publicly apologized to CAFE for the shenanigans, that we had been right, he had been wrong, and he told the rest of the council that there will be no more modifications. It's supposed to come up every year for review so that it could still be tweaked, you know. And he said, there will be no more modifications under my watch. You know, that we've done enough damage. So we got the minimum wage. We got it across the entire city, but not without rancor. So, you know, you go slow and you persuade and all that good stuff, or you take the road that we chose to take because we could see that politically it wasn't going to work. Okay, questions? Yes. No, we didn't think that was going to happen. We thought that it was incumbent on us to be reasonable and to approach them. We knew that they would not be happy, but we wanted to know why they were not going to be happy and try to persuade them to be happier, you know, to accept our, you know, we have all these facts and figures, and, you know, that's what Mo says, you go for the moral issue. You don't go for the economic issue. Yeah.
Was the city attorney, you know, running interference for the council at that point?
The city attorney was running interference as a city attorney. He just, he wanted to display his power. He also was no longer city attorney because he was caught doing some things. Yes, back here. From going to the voters, yeah. Mm-hmm.
What remedy, if any, do the people have or did CAFE have if they maligned it beyond its original?
You vote those people out and you try again.
So there's no addressing the modified legislation?
No, not. I mean, we can try again. But first of all, it took an awful lot of effort, a lot of work, a lot of hours, a lot of money. We made a lot of our points. I think we need to wait a little bit. The mayor's going to make sure that there are no more modifications. That's good. And we need to wait at least 3 years, I think, before we can try again. But we can try again. And in the meantime, we're working on the state legislature again. We have to get rid of the governor, but that'll happen. Yes, Mo.
What's the thinking in terms of not taking it to the vote?
The thinking of not taking it to the vote? Well, how else were we going to get it? Who's thinking? You mean they...
You had the option of either the city accepting it?
The city had the option. Yeah, that's under the ordinance for citizen initiative, that the city can simply vote in whatever the proposal is, and then you don't have to go through the expense of an election. We did not. Well, we tried. We met with the city manager. We met with the mayor, who was not on our side at that point. You know, we met with some of those people and said, you know, let it go to the ballot. And they didn't do that. Yes?
Did you have any of your allies abandon you when the city council said, we'll give you $8.50?
No. No. In fact, when they went to $8.50, our ranks grew. Okay. $8.50 was not adequate. And there was no, well, and we'll index it, and, you know, we're going to get to 1010 eventually, or, you know, it was just 850. Nobody liked that except business owners. Yes?
What is the living wage calculated for your city?
Well, ours is about the same as Durango.
So 12?
Yeah, it's $12 to $15. Well, closer to 12. We're, you know, if you want to find a nice, cheap place to retire to, Las Cruces is terrific, and CNN Money thinks so too. That's why I'm there. Yes, back there. Well, that's my opinion. Folks, thanks for your attention. If there are more questions, please come up here. Thank you very much.
I used to be a member of the Unitarian Church in Las Vegas, Las Cruces.
Is that a fact?
In fact, what? I was president of the congregation at one time.
No kidding. Oh,
in 1998.
Okay. Just one term? Two terms?
Yeah, just one term.
One term.
No, and then I moved.
Okay. And, well, you know, where'd you move to?
Well, I'm really proud of what you guys have been doing.
It's a lot of pieces to fit into.
I go there occasionally just to say hello to some of my older friends. Yeah. And, a great place when I was there.
Well, it still is. I love it. I've been there 8 years now.
We moved
Detroit.
There in 95,
yeah.
And we left in 99.
Okay. So I hope you are satisfied where you are, too.
Well, we're like a lot of old grand people, we follow our grandchildren.
Yeah.
Or our children.
Your children. Your children and therefore
children
the grandchildren.
Our children all moved to Texas, and so...
Yeah. Yeah, there you go. How are you doing? All right. Thank you. Yeah, well, that's what it has to be.
You know, because we in California, we recently have the state lifted, but it's far from being a living wage. You know, it's about half the living wage.
Right.
And already we find people who say, well, you know, that's a victory. We don't want to push it.
Yes,
you know.
Yes, I know.
But it.
Well,
but great stuff.
I'd love a copy of your PowerPoint as well.
Oh, you would.
Will you email it to me, or can I put my flash drive into your computer right now? And
yeah, you know, yeah, why don't you do that?
Okay. I knew there was a reason why I stuck this in my pocket.
Sure, I would love to. sure? No. So there was, I think I told you, a representative from them.
All righty.